Hello, everyone. This is Eric Pennington, and welcome to the Spirit of EQ podcast. We're glad that you've tuned in. A few things we wanted to tell you at the beginning of the show, and that's this podcast was created to be a tool to help you, primarily to discover and grow your EQ. Science and our own lived experiences confirm that the better we are at managing our emotions, the better we're going to be at making decisions, which leads to a better life. And that's something we all want. We're glad that you've taken out the time today to listen and hope that something that you hear will lead to a breakthrough. Hey, one last thing. We'd really appreciate a review on whichever platform you use to listen. And if you want to, leave some comments about what you heard today, as well as follow and subscribe. That way you won't miss a single episode as we continue this journey. And with that, the show begins. Jess Jensen, welcome.
Thank you. Good to be here.
You know, we met somewhat in a, it wasn't an odd way, but you'd reached out to us about being on the show. And as I may have mentioned to you, we get pitched a lot. But what was intriguing to me about your pitch was it was human. And I don't know if I told you that when we met, but I really appreciate that. Mm-hmm. Because as you can imagine, we have a number of those that might pitch us just to sell something. And obviously, or maybe not obviously, our audience doesn't really dig a sales show. Your world is, at least, and you can course correct me if I'm not quite getting this right, is all around about this idea about personal branding and probably more communications, things like that. And what's interesting, we've got a lot of things we wanted to ask you about that and tying them into the work or to the learnable skill of EQ. But let's start here for our audience. It kind of do the old fashioned, let's define, what is a brand? What is branding all about?
Yeah, happy to start there. So I often use the term executive branding. I do focus largely on either founders and business owners or pretty seasoned senior leaders. And the reason is because when you've gotten to that level in your career, whatever path you might have taken to get there, you've often got a lot of stories to tell. And people have interest in hearing sort of the behind the scenes, your point of view. And I find that often leaders underestimate the power of their own platform, their own story. And so to answer your question around what is a brand, whether it's a brand that's a product or a service, or it's a human brand, you know, I think Jeff Bezos is attributed for saying the famous line of the brand is what everyone says about you when you're not in the room.
Oh, my. What a great quote. Yeah.
And we hope it's good things.
Always, but, yep.
But we can't control, right, what folks are thinking and saying when we're not there. I often add a little spin to that when I'm working with clients and, you know, I ask them to think about sort of the big L word, right? What is the legacy that you might want to leave when you eventually decide to step away? Mm-hmm. At some point, we're all going to retire. We're all going to transition or sort of, you know, quiet down professionally. And the idea of beginning with the end in mind and thinking about what are the things that I want my team, my company, my division, my customers to say about the kind of leader that I was, the kind of person that I was when I've stepped away. Mm-hmm. So that is the beginning of the discussion around brand.
Yeah. So this idea, maybe as a follow-up question, and you kind of touched on it, answered it, why it's important. Do you find that many of these leaders who maybe are not so conscious of the legacy they've been building, which I think is fascinating, right? We're all building a legacy, whether we acknowledge it or not, right? Do they kind of give you, I guess I'm going to use how my dogs are sometimes, you know, when you say something and they cock their head like that, or is there an embrace of that now where they're very aware that, yeah, I need to have a brand?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think there is a pause when you ask someone to think about their legacy, because that feels really big.
Yes.
And obviously there's a system by which we can break that down so it feels more bite-sized and approachable.
Right.
But I think that so many of us are running so fast. We are inundated with so much content, so many messages. We have so many responsibilities. And again, especially when you're at an elevated level or you're more seasoned, you probably have a lot of people that are relying on you. And it's hard to pause and ask yourself, when I'm done, what do I want to leave behind? And how do I want other people to describe me when I'm not here? And then take that sort of nucleus, and this is the work that I do with them. How do we shape that into a narrative platform, which is really a fancy way of saying, let's pick 2 to 4 sort of territories, topics that support that legacy, support that brand you want to build. And often it's partially in service of your business, but also in service of just who you are, right? Your story. And then now let's start architect content in the right places at the right time that repeatedly reinforce those narratives.
That's beautiful. And Jess, I just immediately in my head, I'm going, you know, this could apply to someone who's a father, who's a brother, who's a neighbor, who's a church member, you know, parish member, whatever. This formula, it seems like it has application beyond just if you're an executive or a high level leader. Would you agree with that? Or am I just fantasizing about what it could be?
No, I mean, it's anyone that wants to communicate more publicly to whomever their followers, their connections, it could be, again, to your point, it could be a leader at a church. It could be the congregation, right? We all have access to folks through digital platforms, regardless of the industry or the vertical. So I think it's being more intentional about talking about those subject areas that really matter to you. Mm-hmm. And then allowing there to be a little fuller of a picture of who you are. So a little bit of the imperfection, the vulnerability, you know, telling those stories of the challenges that we each have faced in our past and how they have shaped who you are today.
So what I would like to do before we end today is to maybe get into your approach formally, as in if somebody hired you. But I think about it, and maybe for our audience, Jeff, I would recommend that maybe you slow down, maybe pause, take some time to reflect on that legacy. What do you want to be said about you? And you don't need to go all the way to the day of your death and a funeral thing. I know that's been an overworked approach to this, but just even if you said, you know, by the time I'm fill in the blank age, what would I want my family, my coworkers, whatever it may be, to say about me? And then I love how you kind of presented it, that then you create somewhat of a strategy that continually reminds. And again, you may not be, Jeff, they may not be a senior level leader in a Fortune 500 company.
No, I've got a question. We've been talking about long-term things. What about the legacy that I'll have of you after we get done today? Is that part of this whole thing? I'm not putting you on a spot, okay? I'm just using that as an example.
He's not being a cruel co-host, Jess.
No, I can attest to that. Anyway.
No, I appreciate it. So you're asking me what legacy I want to leave, Jeff.
With the interaction that you and I are having right now, is that part of this whole thing? Other than just, you know, when I retire or whatever. I think it's making sense in my head.
So. Yeah. No, I appreciate that. I mean, a part of why I enjoy the podcasting format is because it feels very personal. I listen to a tremendous amount of podcasts myself. I actually co-hosted one back in the day. I'm a big fan of audio. I grew up around a lot of music. And so I think podcasting is a wonderful.
And Jess, I'm gonna interrupt you, and this is the most polite interruption. When you said music, you probably didn't realize that you're talking to two hosts. I think we've maybe only missed maybe two episodes where we didn't have some type of musical reference. We are that in spades. So that's why we looked at each other. And yeah, so it's good. I'm sorry, but I interrupted you. Keep going.
Well, are either of you musicians or musically inclined?
Both of us. Yeah. And both of us happen to be bass players. So.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm married to a drummer. So
I love it. So I played the drums in elementary school. That was my early start. And then my dad is a longtime musician. He's a guitar player, piano player. Was in many bands. I grew up around a lot of music. So awesome. I think audio is sort of baked into all three of us.
Yes. Mm-hmm. There you go.
Yeah. And so to answer your question, Jeff, I mean, my hope is that formats like podcasting, I also, I do have a lot of fun on social. I've grown up around social, so that feels very natural to me. I like to write. And so the format of the written word combined with the visual nature of social, I think is a great complement to audio. And together, I think those stitch, I hope, what is my own brand, which is one of humanity and approachability, curiosity. And so, so part of why I do these interviews is to meet great people like you, but to also use a format that I encourage my clients to use, which I think is audio, which is very, very powerful.
Well, and I think it's a separator. A differentiator maybe is the better word, Jess, that really leaped out again with my interaction with you, was because what we have found with the number of outreaches that we get about being on the show, I'm able to start to define a pattern between those who pitch to sell and those who pitch to sort of enlighten and inspire. And I think what those that pitch to sell sometimes forget is that if you make that connection, and maybe to Jeff's thought, right, mm-hmm. that if they consider their legacy in the moment, the sales will follow, you know? Mm-hmm. But that might be for another show. So, right. Jeff, on that note,
okay.
Go ahead.
You mentioned about how people listen to story. When somebody is sharing their story, for me, that is an emotional connection. Mm-hmm. How important do you think that is in this whole process, is to develop the emotional connection, whether it's with story or, which I think is one of the most powerful ways to do it?
Yeah. I mean, I think you said it well. People remember stories, and they remember stories over data, over facts, over theory, right? People remember stories. And so the more that we're able to communicate that narrative platform we talked about, that sort of those pillars that we want to represent who we are in the form of stories, the more that it connects with people on both sides of the brain, right? I mean, we can be talking about our business, but still sharing challenges that we faced, you know, in years past, and how that's shaped the kind of company that we're hoping to lead today, or the team that we want to build. So story is hugely important. And I actually think that there's a lot of folks, and me included in this, that it is scary to put yourself out there when maybe you felt like you didn't fit in or you were not typical. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of us have had those chapters in our lives. And for most of us, we sort of want to hide it, kind of push it down. But it's actually the very opposite. Right. It's the it is the origin story and the experiences that we've had, and maybe the atypical chapters in our life that make us uniquely you. And that's really where, again, as a leader or a business owner, that's where online you're going to drive connection and have real impact.
And I think a part of it would be someone is sharing their story with me, and I go, that's exactly what happened to me. Mm-hmm. I'm going to connect with that person because, one, I have empathy for, you know, they went through the same thing. Now I'm excited. How did they get through it? So I think that the emotions are very important.
Well, and the emotion that comes to mind for me that we talk a lot about when you kind of bring it back to kind of professional and executive brand building is this notion of a trust economy, which is kind of a buzzword, but like, let's unpack that. There's a lack of trust for a lot of leaders across all verticals, and that's been bubbling for a long time. And so the more that somebody can be transparent and candid, and again, illustrate some of their vulnerabilities, perhaps, or learnings through storytelling, the more they are building trust with their audience, they're building approachability and relatability, like you just said, Jeff. And that, from a business standpoint, paves the way for future customers, clients, partners, and even attracts future talent, right? Talent is paying attention. So trust is a really fantastic outcome that comes out of the work that we do that helps you scale and grow your business in loads of different ways.
So Jess, what do you say to that leader that says, hey, Jess, I've kind of lost the trust of my team, my number of my associates. I don't think this is really going to work for me. I think I've just kind of got to push through till I can get to fill in the blank. What do you say to that person, to that leader?
Well, first of all, if someone is self-aware enough and candid enough to actually share with me that they think they've lost some trust, I already like them, right? I am already interested. Because many people either A, wouldn't even recognize that's happened, or B, they might recognize it in kind of their heart of hearts, but they might not say that out loud to anybody else. Mm-hmm. So they just push through, right? Just ignore it. So I would actually, that we're getting almost kind of counseling territory now, but
our audience needs to understand, as I always go, we are not clinicians, but if it happens to have some essence of that, we're okay with it.
Yeah. Well, and that's one of the things I've discovered about this work that I'm doing. Like, while my background is in executive communications, brand marketing, digital, and I certainly have worked with leaders and teams for years and years. I thought when I came into this, it would be very much focused on the business and very much focused on sort of like, how do we maximize these platforms to the benefit of you and your company? And it is, but it also does get personal, and we start to have real conversations about, again, how do you want your team to see you? What kind of customers do you want to work with and attract? And then that opens up dialogue that is much more in the territory of sort of psychology and counseling, if you will.
Well, and Jess, I think in many ways, you being that person, when we start talking about legacy, I think you immediately bring people to a place that requires deeper thought. It requires you to reflect on what kind of life have I lived so far? Who have I touched? Maybe who have I offended? Who have all of those things? And I would think in order for it to be beneficial for not only for their audience, but for themselves, is that, well, okay, I need to be able to interact with someone who's going to allow me to say, I don't think they trust me. Because after the last, restructuring, it ended not going well. I mean, fill in the blank with the situation. And who knows, maybe that pathway is what they need just as a human being. And it just happened to be that branding was a way to kind of awaken that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think the work that we do has the ultimate output, and the product is around scaling your business, you know, growing your customer base and building a professional brand. But the journey that we go on to get to that point does require some self-reflection, some self-analysis, the ability to, or the willingness to be a little vulnerable. And that, again, my background, I have an undergrad in psychology and then I have an MBA. So I've always had sort of this left and right brain configuration. You know, I like both. Yeah. And I think that this work kind of captures both of those sides.
Those sides. Yes. Yes. Jeff, what is the SEQ development report?
I'm glad you asked me that, Eric. The SEQ development report is something that we here at Spirit of EQ have developed to blend the idea of emotional intelligence with a person's spiritual life. And we're not talking about religion. We're talking about how they connect with themselves, other people, and the world around them.
Why is it important?
I think it's important because it allows someone to see where they stand, to give them information about maybe parts of their life they may need to work on, parts of their life that they're really doing well and learn to leverage it. And it just gives a person a better way of getting through the world.
So how do you get this report?
Well, first, you need to contact us.
Mm-hmm.
Info at Spirit of EQ is just a great way to do it. Then you would take an assessment, 15, 20 minutes, done online. And then after that, the report requires a debrief to go through all the things in it because it's got a ton of information. And then if you want to further your journey, we can do coaching and things like that with you down the road. And that's basically it.
Cool. Thanks, Jeff. And now back to the episode. And we'll be back to the episode after this. So if someone out there is intrigued and saying, you know what, yeah, maybe it is time for me to start formalizing and being more intentional about this thing. And though our podcast is not a place where we're going to, you know, walk them through all the steps of building a brand, what are some of the just some basic things, maybe the minimums that someone should be thinking about when it comes to building a brand?
Yeah. So there is a roughly a 5-step kind of process that I often go through with my clients, and I can do a real high level, just touch briefly on each, but it naturally walks us through. And so the first one is really defining your audience of one. We have to know who we're trying to attract, right? We have to know, what is my customer or client? What are their fears? What are their challenges? What are their strengths? And it might be that we have multiple audiences. It could be that, yes, my number one audience is this ideal customer, but then, like I mentioned earlier, I also need to attract future talent or my current employees. They're paying attention to what I'm saying. That's important for retention. Could be that I'm trying to speak to more of a financial audience, right? A board of directors, if I'm publicly traded, the street, right? We know there's a lot of psychology that goes into stock price.
Yeah.
So there could be multiple audiences, but I encourage them to, let's start with one, your most important one. Let's talk about what that person might, be challenged with or be interested in. And let's kind of flesh that out, that audience. Two, we spoke about this already at the top of the discussion, but really developing what I call a narrative platform, which often is around three territories, three kind of subject areas that we want to repeatedly be creating content and talking about. So often one is more business or industry oriented based on whatever vertical they work in.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, for someone in the tech industry, certainly AI is going to be some facet of that subject for them, right?
Yeah.
So business oriented. One is often around the kind of leader that they see themselves as, or they aspire to be, a little bit more of the, how do I show up as a lead of people? And then the third is often something that's maybe a personal passion area for them. Maybe it's a nonprofit they're heavily involved in, or a certain, again, this comes often from where, how they grew up, you know, a topic that's very resonant based on maybe what they do outside of a 9-to-5 environment.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't have to be those three, but those tend to be how it falls out often. And then that shapes this blueprint, right? This narrative platform where, as we step three, go to create content, we're always coming back and saying, is this in support of your narrative platform? Because there's a lot of stuff that you can just respond to kind of ad hoc. And I mean, occasionally that's fine, but you want to consist, this is, you know, building a brand 101, whether it's a product, service, or a person.
Yeah,
you want to consistently go back to those, say, three-ish tenets of your narrative platform and ensure that the content you're creating is serving the goal of that platform. And then the last two steps are a little bit more tactical, but they can make a big difference in how we show up. One I recommend at step four is the notion of kind of mastering one platform. So let's say it's audio. Let's just say that you've got a background in being on stage, or you've interviewed a number of times, you feel really comfortable in this audio space. Great. Let's just start with podcast guesting. Let's get you dialed in that area. And we're going to do that for a while. And then we'll eventually expand into other digital platforms. For a lot of clients, it's LinkedIn. That's a place they feel comfortable. They spend time. That's a clear pathway for them. So let's pick one, get really good at it, learn from it, iterate. And then over time, we'll add on more platforms as we go. And then the last one is one of my favorite lines. Again, this isn't me. I don't take credit for this. But this idea of relationships are built in the comments. So all of the digital platforms that we all love and know, there's usually some ability to provide a comment, a review, something to that effect. And you'd be surprised how many people are publishing content sort of one way and then walking away. And they're not actually spending time nurturing the community, responding to comments and questions, listening to what people are saying back to them. So the real pro move here is once you get a cadence, you have a strategy, and you're publishing in whatever form you've chosen, spend time building relationships in the comments section, because that's where people really see that you're there to have a two-way dialogue.
Yeah, that's great. And you made something that's technical in nature, very approachable. So I appreciate that.
Yes.
And I want to kind of come back to the legacy thing as it connects to this building of a brand. So obviously in our culture, we're experiencing all these extrinsic forces that are trying to define us and tell us who we are, what we should be, where we should live, what our career path should be, all of those things. And if you've listened to our show in any amount of time, it's probably pretty clear one of our competencies in our EQ model is intrinsic motivation, right? And I wonder, do you think it's important, or how important is it for that leader to really define, okay, because you mentioned like determining the customer or the client that you're after, that kind of thing. Is there value in maybe even defining who you are not targeting, who you do not want to be, right? So can you talk a little bit about that? Because I think the intrinsic thing might leave the person a lot healthier as they're building than if they do the old, well, I should be on LinkedIn, so I guess I'll go ahead and I'll post three times a week. Oh, I should do a podcast, so I better do it. You see where I'm going with that?
Yeah, I mean, definitely the long-term motivation, because a brand is built over weeks, months, and years. A brand is not built. We all know that. Think about any brand of any company or any individual, and it's years of you receiving messages in different forms and fashions that has built a reputation in your mind. So doing something certainly from an extrinsic motivation standpoint, or thinking you should, or I need to, it's not going to last. It's going to be way too hard to keep that up long term, and it most likely will not be authentic or human, because it's a should, not a want.
Yeah, that's powerful. That's powerful.
I've got a question.
Yeah.
So, you've spent years building your brand, and you make big boo boo. How do you rebuild?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great question, Jeff. And that's happened to so many people and companies, right? We can think of lots of examples of that. So I'll answer it in two ways. So my direct answer is be as transparent as you possibly can be. Now, again, depending on the size of your company, depending on if it's public or private, et cetera, certainly you have to be thoughtful about, you know, sharing material information, or if you're in the middle of some sort of litigation, mm-hmm. right? Depends on what the boo-boo is.
Yeah.
But given what you know, those constraints, obviously sharing internally first with your staff and employees is key, and then externally as much as you can, quickly and honestly. And we've seen CEOs do this well, right? We've seen examples of this. So I think that's the direct answer, is to move quickly and to be candid and honest and specific about what you're going to do to right the ship, okay, to make modifications. I'll also add, you know, this is a bit of my own personal background. You know, there was a chapter where when I was at Qualcomm there, and this is all publicly shareable information, you know, we were in the middle of a number of lawsuits, right? We were in litigation with governments across the globe. And this is only a couple years after I got there. I was pretty early in my tenure. And it was largely because Qualcomm is a massive research and development company, puts loads of money into developing technologies and then patenting them and licensing them to other tech companies for use across the globe. And so there were entities that didn't feel that was fair, that didn't want to pay the royalties that Qualcomm had stipulated from the very beginning. And I remember that there was a challenge because a lot of people, whether they're in tech or not, but certainly if they were not in tech, didn't really understand what Qualcomm did. They had maybe heard the name, but it wasn't clear what the brand stood for or what we actually produced in the world. And so what happened is there was a vacuum. There was a lack of a brand. And so people then would write whatever the story was that they wanted to write. So it was a realization when we finally got through all that and everything turned out fine, that if we had done the work to build the brands of our leaders 3, 4, 5 years ago, we might have been able to get out of this mess a lot faster. It might have been much easier for us because people would have understood what we stood for. And it would have been well in advance, the idea of building a moat, right? You build the moat well in advance before you actually go into battle. So that was a great learning for me about, you can certainly do things once a mistake has happened in the public eye to make it right. But what's even better is building that brand before the mistake ever happens.
Oh, wow.
Thanks.
So, you know, Jess, you know, you kind of answered the in a somewhat of a way about the how long it takes, right, to build a brand. And obviously, at least to me, we don't live in an age where longer term thinking and going at a good pace. I'm almost kind of like the marathon versus the sprint idea, right? So when you have a leader maybe that's been lulled into that maybe mindset that, hey, I'm going to hire you and I expect in 3 months, man, I'm going to be off the charts, whatever that is measured by. How do you approach them about that? Hey, this is a long game, not a short game.
Yeah. I mean, this is frankly one of the challenges of being a brand marketer at large, like agnostic of the work I do on executives or leaders or even digital, right? Going way, way back to when we were still in the world of, like, you know, broadcast TV, radio, and out of home, right?
Yeah.
It was still a long game, right? It was still, there was explaining that had to be done. Like, I think of the Mad Men era in like the 60s and 50s, like that you have to keep beating this drum over the course of a period of time and through different avenues, different mediums. And often it has to be, and you have to wait until someone is ready to receive that message for it to really resonate with them. So that discussion has been going on for well before I was in the game, and it's still going on today. That other than, you know, maybe a sort of an e-commerce scenario where there's a promo cut, you know, it's a real quick transaction.
Right.
It is marketing and communications is a long game. So it doesn't mean that you have to commit dollars and time, you know, to me for years. It could be that you just need a partner to set the stage and help with the architecture and get a rhythm going, and then maybe you can carry it on your own. But if it's meaningful to you to build that professional brand, then it is something that you have to nurture for an ongoing basis.
Yeah. And it's interesting to me when I think about Spirit of EQ. Long, long ago in a galaxy far, far away, There was this, I was in sales, and there was this one particular salesperson who was considered to be, not considered, she was at the top. And she was the envy of others like myself who wondered, how in the world she always seems to, how in the world does she? And, you know, you always wondered, and when you're just getting started, I mean, I'm going to try to do what she's doing and that kind of thing. And I remember a very seasoned person in that world that I was running in said, you know, I've never really asked her, but one thing is very clear to me. She shows up every day.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the perception was, and I'd never had a conversation with her, was that her belief was, is that if I just keep showing up consistently every day, doing what I do well, I will win. And some of it was based on her belief that there will be those that wanted to take off like a rocket and they lose steam. The podcasting world is full of that story, right? Where I'm going to start a podcast and then we get 15 episodes in and then where'd they go? Right? And I wonder sometimes if maybe that simple strategy, and I'm seeing that with Spirit of EQ, is that I may not have the best fill in the blank or the most profound or the most technically savvy X, Y, and Z, but we always show up every day.
Mm-hmm.
And I sometimes think that takes some of that, you know, the sting of hearing the word, the term years, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you kind of go, well, maybe the years thing is not so bad. Maybe that's okay. And matter of fact, since the journey is where all the magic happens, right?
You were mentioning the distance between a sprint and a marathon. There's so many people today that don't even finish the sprint.
Well played, Jeff. Well played. Yeah. So within that, are there specific things that you might say to that leader that thinks that it is going to be a sprint that you could, not to push them away, but maybe even just to, hey, let's kind of, you know, take a breath and think about this.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, one of my favorite analogies, and this is the case, I mean, I'm going through this right now myself with building a business, but it's the same analogy for building a brand, is being a farmer, right? I see myself as a farmer. I'm planting seeds. I'm watering them. I'm waiting for the sun to come, right? It's going through all the seasons.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that there's a, a fertile ground and that I have a great harvest. But I don't exactly know when things are going to bloom. I don't exactly know if everything is going to bloom.
Yep.
I might have really great years and then not such great years. But over the long term, if I keep nurturing and planting and watering, it will be successful.
You really,
and it's the same with the brand.
You really just resonated because I'm an old dairy farmer.
Oh, yay. did I explain it correctly then?
Pretty much, except you didn't add the cows getting out, but.
Yeah. Oh my, because you know what? I think about what you're saying, Jess, and I think that the idea of not knowing, you know, what will bear fruit, what will not, is part of that growth process. Because, you know, when I think about, again, I'm going to go personal with Spirit of EQ, you know, when I came around, which was late 2018, you know, we were really rocking and rolling in 2019, investing in education and technology back into the company. And then we got the knock on the door, hello, we're the pandemic. All right. And then, you know, you fast forward, that was actually really good for our company because of the awareness it brought to mental health and brain health and that kind of thing. And then, you know, really, really good years. And then last year, Jess, the bottom fell out for my personal life and like in totality, right? And then sometimes now, Jeff, you know, I'll look back and I'll go, you know, this has been a really cool story. Look what we got through. Look how we pivoted. And I sometimes think leaders, regardless of where they're at and how high or what entry level or whatever, should take that time to kind of because I think that's the makings of a brand. And that's just my amateur approach in that, Jess. But what are your thoughts about that?
No, you're totally right. I mean, a great analogy, look at the stock market. Again, I'm saying nothing new here. You've all seen that, you know, you zoom in and it's chaos, right? And then you zoom out over 70 years and guess what it's done. So it's the same idea with the brand, with our farming analogy, perhaps, Jeff. You know, you have these moments where it feels like the bottom's fallen out or you're having an amazing season. But you, like you said, with your old colleague, Eric, you know, you keep showing up and you keep giving your best and being a full human, right? Showing up in a true sense, not a check the box sense. People see that. They see that, it resonates. They want to do business with you. They want to come work for you. And it takes some courage, but I think that's part of my job is to make it less scary, less foreign.
Yeah.
Because there's a partner. You got someone who you can bounce these things off of before you go live.
So out of curiosity, and I know when we spoke a few weeks ago, month ago maybe, you know, I knew that you had a background in doing this type of work, not exactly, but it was this type within the tech world, right? And I'm always fascinated to hear how women navigate the corporate structure, right? And for our audience, it's not me saying that poor women, they have it so bad, tough, you know, that kind of thing. But, you know, I'm married and I've seen things from afar, if you will, when my wife has experienced some things and her experience has been, it's not sometimes the easiest thing to navigate. So that's a call to all you men leaders. Maybe you should take some notes. But having said that, did you find your experience? And I know we don't have time to, I mean, but just in general, your experience as a woman, being a woman in leadership in that world, in navigating?
Yeah, I appreciate you asking about that. It's funny, I had an intern this summer that wanted to do a whole project on women in leadership roles in business. And so we had some of these same conversations. I'll say this. I was fortunate in that because I worked in marketing and communications, that is one of the subject areas or sort of practice fields within a business mm-hmm. that tends to be a little bit more balanced from a gender perspective.
Yes.
I would have many days at work where it was very 50-50 and, you know, I'd be in 8 meetings a day or something insane and it would generally feel pretty equitable. Mm-hmm. But there was other times when I would, certainly in the tech industry, I worked with a lot of engineers and I would get into sort of the engineering side of the house, whether it was a project we were doing or interviews we were running, whatever. And in those meetings, I was definitely the minority. There's no question. There was usually a couple of women at the table out of, you know, 15. Mm-hmm. And it was also the dynamic was different, the way that conversation happened. And so it was really interesting. One of the things that I think it just comes with some time. I think if I had been in those realms when I was in my early 20s, I would have been much more intimidated. Mm-hmm. But I think as we all kind of gain experience, you start to realize that people are people and everyone has some degree of shortcoming or insecurity and some degree of, you know, a goal or a place they want to get to, a motivation that maybe they don't talk about, but it's inside. And if you can start to kind of see that those pieces of a person, even if maybe they come across as not being as open or welcoming or transparent, I think there's like a little unlock there.
Yeah.
You know, where you kind of get them to show the more human side of themselves.
Yep.
And then it breaks down some of the maybe the stereotypes that we carry.
What's interesting about that, Jess, is that I've told clients as they embark on the journey of building their EQ practice, right, that there is one significant downside, not end of the world stuff, but it's significant, where you will find that as you are growing your emotional intelligence, that gap between those who are not working on that it'll be very vivid to you.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're learning and growing and you want to apply it, and then you're finding that there may be a significant number who are not as open or not as receiving, not receiving it very well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a call to you're better than them. It's almost a call to empathy that they're just not there yet. They don't maybe have the tools. No one has invested in them to learn this learnable skill.
Yeah. And to build on that, again, historically, especially in the tech industry, I mean, there probably are other industries I'm sure that are like this too, but in my experience being in tech the last 13 years, often we're rewarded on the results, and the results are quantifiable in many cases, right? Especially if we're in a technical field.
Yep.
And so often what I saw is that it wouldn't be until somebody really had elevated to a point where they were managing many other people, then if they had never worked on their emotional intelligence muscle historically, because they didn't really need to, or they didn't perceive that they needed to, then it would sort of reveal itself, because now they had people again looking up to them, giving feedback, and then it would sort of become a more urgent need that they do more than just deliver the technical side. They had to also deliver the human side, right? The leadership side, or they weren't going to continue to be elevated in the organization.
Yeah. Wow. So well put. So as we get close to closing out our time with you, Jess, which has been wonderful, and I can always feel it when I know we're running out of time, but I want to, for our audience purposes, there's someone out there who says, I'm really clicking on what she's saying about the importance here. So can you, and just maybe at a high level, somebody comes to you and say, okay, what do we do here? How do we get started? What's your process to getting them down that path?
Yeah. I mean, the easiest thing to do is you can book 25 minutes with me on my website. It's copilotcommunications.com. You just go to the contact section.
And we will have that in the show notes for those of you in the audience as well. So not to worry if you don't remember it here, audio or video, but go ahead.
That's perfect. And one thing I wanted to offer your listeners, I just started doing this and I'm already booked for September. So this would have to be in October, November. Consultation, but I realized there are a lot of people for all different reasons who would love a second set of eyes on their LinkedIn profile. We talked about that earlier.
Oh, yeah,
the gateway for a lot of folks. So I'm offering just these 25-minute practical reviews of someone's LinkedIn profile. I'll give some actionable next steps to them they can walk away and take. So if they book time and just mention Spirit of EQ podcast, I will give them that free LinkedIn audit starting in October.
All right. No, I get it.
Thanks for that.
Yes. Thank you very much, Jess. That's very kind of you. So that would be a starting point. And then I would imagine that initial consultation, be it even if it's not the LinkedIn piece, but if it's someone who actually is, hey, I'm ready to pull the trigger, you'll just take them through your steps of, okay, here's phase one, phase two, phase three. Is that typically how it
would work? Yeah, I mean, there's kind of two paths that I've learned most clients fall into. We always need to start with that blueprint, that narrative platform discussion I shared earlier. Because if we don't know our strategy, then everything after that is sort of ad hoc.
Yeah.
But I've learned that after we get that strategy work done, which often takes, maybe 2 to 4 weeks, depends on how much, how calendars look, then they go down a path A, which can be, hey, I just want to do all of this on my own. I want to create the content, whatever format or medium, but I'd love an accountability partner. I know if I check in with you every week or every other week, for 45 minutes, you will keep me on track and we'll make sure we've got an editorial strategy, a calendar, what am I doing next week, et cetera. The other path is where, and this is often where people are just so strapped for time, the bandwidth is real.
Mm-hmm.
They want me to help them create the content. So in that scenario, it's obviously more of my time. Right. We're still talking weekly, but I'm actually coming up with the copy and the visuals, and I'm helping them construct whatever content they need for their medium. And then they, of course, they provide the final blessing and publish. But that's a deeper engagement for someone who really is short on time.
Yeah. Wow. And then I really just one last question around this process. You know, obviously, if you're intimidated by the idea of and I'm thinking about someone who maybe is more technical minded, right? And you've done a great job here today to kind of, you know, make this approachable and not so intimidating.
I understood it.
And hey, if Jeff understood it.
I think it was the farming analogy.
Yes, that must
have the music you got me.
Yeah, that must have been it. That must have been it. And I don't want to overstate this idea, but how do you approach it when the person is, maybe it's not so much intimidation as in expectation, right? Is there a discussion within this time with you about expectations? And I know we talked a little bit about, hey, it's not going to happen overnight and on and on and on, but maybe they want to know, like, okay, so if I'm posting on LinkedIn about fill in the blank, what's a reasonable expectation on my part?
Mm-hmm. Well, often we would use the terminology when I was in-house of sort of activity metrics.
Okay.
And then business impact. And you can imagine one comes first and then the second comes after, typically. Mm-hmm. So in the beginning, the beauty of digital, as you guys know with podcasting, you see your metrics, I'm sure, on the weekly. You can measure and set benchmarks and goals around whether it's subscribers, listeners, engagements, shares, all those things we can measure. And social is ripe with that as well. So that's where we usually start, as I run a monthly dashboard for my clients. And I show them, okay, here's, you know, for example, I want your engagement rate to be at least 3%. That sounds so tiny, but the average brand is under 1%. So a human gets triple that. Okay. But often they're coming in maybe at that 1.5 level. So let's watch it. Every month we're going to measure and see, and we usually see it start to go up after a few months of work. So we start with measuring and setting benchmarks in that sort of activity metric space, because those are proxies, right? They're sort of like foreshadowing. Then what comes, which is business impact, where all of a sudden, again, my sales team is going out and doing calls, and the people on the calls are mentioning what they saw me do on LinkedIn last month. Or I'm invited to be on a fireside chat or do a keynote. All of a sudden, I'm getting inbound, right? People are asking me to come speak. So they're actually starting to see the business shift as they've been beating this drum and building this momentum digitally as a sort of secondary effect.
I almost would say on that note for our audience, keep showing up.
Well said.
Yes.
We heard somebody very wise say that.
Who's that?
I don't know.
Well, Jess, once again, truly appreciate you coming on the show. We've enjoyed it. And for our audience, we'll have Jess's information in the show notes, so you'll be able to take advantage of her generous offer for your LinkedIn profile. And if you want to get in contact with her about her work specific to your world, your leadership, that'll be there too. So once again, we appreciate you tuning in, and we look forward to the next time that we're together. Take care.
Thank you so much for having me.
Hi, everyone. This is Eric Pennington with The Spirit of EQ. I'm not introducing a new episode today. I'm here to tell you some things that might help you. Jeff, you're with me as always. So
yes.
How do people get in touch with us?
Well, the best way is just send us an email at info@spiritofeq.com.
That's awesome. Jeff, I was also thinking about reviews, and I'm notoriously bad at asking for them. So reviews on all of the platforms, wherever you get your podcasts.
Yes.
You think that'd be good?
I think that would be great, because one, that will help us learn how to make better ones. And it's always good for us.
So we're not the perfect podcast hosts.
super close.
Okay, all right, but not, still, not totally. We want perfect. Your feedback. We want your feedback.
But it also might let us know a new subject. Hey, we need to dig deeper into that. Yeah. So let us know what you think.
Cool. We really appreciate that. As always, too, there is social media, LinkedIn, Facebook, and we also have a YouTube channel. Those also have mechanisms or options for you to be able to leave a comment, a like, or those kind of things. Just want to make sure that you know how to get in touch with us. Right, Jeff?
Right. We appreciate you all.
Thank you. Once again, we really appreciate you tuning in today. One of the things that Jeff and I want to bring to your attention as well is that when we created this podcast, it was not intended to take the place of a clinician. In other words, if you find yourself in a place where there's something deeper going on or something that you cannot solve on your own, we do recommend that you reach out to a clinician of some sort. This podcast is purely opinion-based, and it is rooted in the desire to help you along your path in whatever way we can. However, it is never going to replace, nor should it ever be looked at as a replacement for clinical help in any way. Thanks again for tuning in.